All right, more on that in just one moment. And by one moment, I mean right now. We are joined by a senior writer for Yahoo. Previously covered the Bulls for NBC Sports Chicago. He covered the Pistons for the Detroit News. He is still the pride of Detroit. He is Vincent Goodwill. Vincent, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. How you doing?
Good, good, good. Great to have you back. Thanks so much. I want to start here. You had a great, great tweet last night. And I quote, "Karl Malone has been retired for nearly 20 years, and he is the sole reason people don't rock with the Utah Jazz. It's amazing." End of tweet. Personally, I love the guy. This is a big Karl Malone house. But what do you make of the Utah Jazz slander and LeBron's explanation that nobody picked the Jazz in video games growing up?
Well, as someone who is LeBron's age, I can confirm that nobody picked the Utah Jazz in right. NBA Live or the early days of NBA 2K. I mean, look, I think whenever you think of the Utah Jazz from a brand standpoint, you think of Karl Malone and John Stockton and Jerry Sloan. And by and large, I don't really have a huge problem with Jerry Sloan or even John Stockton, even for John Stockton's kind of, you know, toeing the line a little bit. But Karl Malone is not a hill I'm willing to die on for anybody or any reason whatsoever. One of the dirtiest players in the league. And because of that, Jim, that reputation that sort of spilled on to various iterations of the Jazz from this point on. Remember the whole Derek Fisher thing when they let him out of his contract and how the fans treated him on his way back. But honestly, I think this is small-town gripes from every team that sort of lets you in on what's happening in their locker room. Whenever they lose a game that they feel like they should win, and they say, everybody's hosing us, nobody wants us to win. And if you're a small-town team, that's kind of like this, you know, confirmation bias thing where you feel like you're getting hosed. They got hosed against Philadelphia. I'll completely agree with you there. But by and large, I don't think anybody's sitting around saying, you know what, who should we host today? The Utah Jazz.
Vincent Goodwill is joining us. You know, we're talking about Hall of Famers now, Karl Malone, John Stockton, but they were chippy, man. They were very, very chippy. And to your point, they towed the line. They were right on the line. They were off and over the line. That was a very, very chippy team, but they were great. Now, what do you think about this? Now, their complaints about the officiating in Philadelphia, you just addressed that. How do you think overall, though, they respond to the Utah Jazz slander? Will they use this to their advantage? Is it going to mean anything at all to them?
I think they're setting the stage for the playoffs. Like, if this were some, like, a veteran move sort of thing, like the coach was to say in the locker room, you know what, guys, nobody wants us to win. And everybody says, yeah, you're right. And they go out there and they say that to the press. And it becomes this narrative. And it becomes this rallying cry for a team that needs something. Because if you think about it, aside from Rudy Gobert being, you know, patient zero, we don't really have an identity for the Utah Jazz. And it's not a negative thing. We just know they play good defense. They play really smart. They're well coached. But we don't know them to be anything as far as a brand or something identifiable that the rest of the league can sort of, you know, hold on to or fans can hold on to. Now, they are the team that got hosed, essentially. And that's what they're going to walk into every arena for the rest of the season and say, and as soon as the playoffs start, they're going to start banging this drum all over again, especially when you think about the fact if they're going to have to play maybe Golden State in the first round, maybe Denver in the second round, maybe the Lakers in the conference finals. What better way to get the attention of the league than to do it early as opposed to game three in the series where maybe you're down 2-1 after a bad call goes against you? Maybe you just grease the skids a little bit early.
I would like to reiterate a line that you just had that you probably are not going to get enough credit for, but the fact that the Utah Jazz do not have an identity other than Rudy Gobert is patient zero. It's a strong line. Vincent Goodwill is joining us. I want to make sure that I accentuate that. Listen, another point that you made last night that I do want to pick up on, and that's the fact that LeBron accepts the title of ambassador for the sport. And you tweeted, quote, "embraces it, brings the proper energy," end quote. How much of a responsibility is that? And lay it out for me. How significant is that?
It's huge. And I think it's something we take for granted because LeBron has been this way for so long. It's kind of like this accepted thing that we truly don't think about. But when you think about the statesman of the game, and honestly, when I was looking at it, Jim, last night, I was looking at LeBron being engaging and smiling and everything else. And Kevin Durant looked like he could rather be anywhere else
right.
in the world. And that's not a shot per se at Kevin Durant, but if you want to be acknowledged as the best player, as the guy, there's certain things you have to lean into a little bit more. You got to give the public a little bit more of something as opposed to, I didn't really think about who I picked, and it doesn't really mean anything. Like, if you want the fans to care about a game, especially a game like this, then you have to give off the appearance that you give a damn yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you're asking the fans, you're asking the league to invest in you, not just your play, but you as a person, not necessarily you as a brand, but you as a personality, you as someone with personality, with thoughts. And I think that is so critical in a way that LeBron has made it look so easy. And I have a lot of gripes with LeBron, you know, on the floor, off the floor, whatever, not like in a negative way, but he's not a perfect human being. And I can, you know, you can dissect some of the things that he's done and criticize them. But as a statesman of the league, as someone who's promoting the game of basketball in a healthy way, nobody can take anything away from that.
No, in that sense, I agree with you. For instance, if there's enough pressure that comes along and enough responsibility that comes along with being the face of a franchise, multiply that by 100, and then you have the pressure that comes along with being the face of the entire league. And to your point about Kevin Durant, like, if you don't really give a damn about it, don't expect me to either. So when you talk about LeBron, Vincent, really quickly, like, when you say, like, he's not perfect, I mean, I've got gripes with this guy either on or off the floor. If I were to say to you, give me one gripe you have with LeBron, what would it be?
I mean, when you say a gripe, I just think that there's this narrative that's been formed where whenever LeBron's team loses, it's everybody else's fault. And whenever he wins, no matter who else he has around, it's because of his singular greatness, when by and large, everything that is formed around him is formed to accentuate his best talents, which a lot of times can win. But it's almost like this. He's in the ultimate win-win situation, and I think those discussions deserve a little bit more nuance as opposed to just saying, hey, LeBron is the greatest player ever without fault, and we can't have these discussions about how these teams are formed and everything else. Like, those are the things I'm talking about. Not anything major. I like how he's doing things as far as, you know, activism, using his voice and everything else, even how he comes across as a father in today's age. Like, there's so many positive, great things about him. We're talking about basketball. Yeah, we can nitpick a little bit.
I get that. I agree with you. There are some nuances involved. Vincent Goodwill is joining us. All right, you've got another piece up right now on Yahoo about James Harden that I thought was really interesting. James Harden is flourishing right now with Brooklyn. He would have you believe that, hey, I'm the exact same guy. I'm not doing anything different. I'm doing what I've always done. This is who I am. Is that the way it seems to you?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. I think when you're the face of the franchise and the team is built around your personality and your habits, and everything that you stand for as an athlete, that's a lot of weight to carry. And there's only so many guys who can actually do that, perform on the floor, and have sort of cultivate this environment of accountability, and everybody can sort of rally around them. I'm not sure if James Harden is that type of guy to lead. Now, can he be the next guy in the locker room that doesn't have to carry all that weight, play the way that he plays, and have it be in such a way where he can play the exact same way, Jim, and I think he is playing the exact same way, but the pie is smaller. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have access to everything because he's playing with a better player in Kevin Durant, even though they've only played 7 games together. That team is rightfully built around Kevin Durant, and James Harden is a player who is built around that, as opposed to we're just going to accentuate everything else to be around James Harden, and everything else is a supplemental piece. James Harden is a supplemental piece. There's nothing wrong with that, because Magic Johnson, up until 1987, was a supplemental piece to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and still won 2 NBA Finals MVPs until they turned the team over to him. So I think some people take it as a negative, but I think there's some great players who've been supplemental pieces in other ways and still have been able to shine and develop their own identity within the team construct.
Scottie Pippen.
I'm from Detroit, so you can. I'm a person that slammed the Scottie Pippen pretty frequently. I'm the person who says that Michael Jordan is so great that he went into the Hall of Fame as 2 players, himself and Scottie Pippen.
Vincent Goodwill is joining us right now. I guess what you get right down to then, I'm asking the question in a sense that if KD is a legitimate number one, LeBron obviously is a legitimate number one. I would argue that James Harden is a number one but can play a number two there because KD is there. How many legitimate true number ones are there in the NBA?
Now, when we say number one, I mean number one as in as soon as I say his name, we're saying I can win a championship with this guy depending on what's around. We're only saying like 3 guys. We're saying LeBron. We're saying Steph Curry. We're saying Kevin Durant. I think Luka Doncic is entering that conversation. I think Jokic is entering that conversation. I think Embiid is entering that conversation. Other than that, all of these guys are still, are saying, great players, even Kawhi Leonard when he's completely healthy and engaged and everything else. But there's only about five or six of those guys in the league at a given time. It doesn't mean that everybody else is trash or that Giannis can't be MVP or anything else. But until you show it in that way that, you know, the way that I play can win at the highest level and beat another team's best player playing this way with me as the number one guy, until I actually see that, I can't put you in that conversation.
Now, I guarantee, Vincent, there are some people listening right now that are hearing some of the things you're saying and saying, man, exactly, 100%. And there are some people saying, man, that is so wrong, like they do about me every single day and half for the last 25 years. But this is what I respect about you and the way you go about your craft. You're not afraid of bold stances. Another example, you're not a fan of Peeps, the marshmallow candy. What is your message to people who eat and actually like Peeps?
Now, I come from a house where people have eaten Peeps and have told them that to their face, Jim Rome, that they were terrorists. People who eat Peeps along with candy corn are terrorists.
Okay, I think we have to make a distinction between Peeps and candy corn, all right? Candy corn is strong. Peeps are ass.
Jim, you might just be a terrorist.
I don't know, man. I don't know what it is, like the divisiveness and the polarization of candy corns, man. People do not like the corn, and I'm all about the corn. Peeps are ass, though. I'm not coming off that. They're terrible. They're terrible. But
you're halfway there. You're halfway there.
All right, that's better than not being anywhere near there. He is a senior writer for Yahoo. He covered the Bulls for NBC Sports Chicago. He covered the Pistons for the Detroit News. He is the pride of the D. Vincent, have a great weekend. Great to have you back. Thanks so much.
Hey, appreciate you, Jim. Thanks
appreciate
again, man.
Appreciate you. Thank you. I like it. It's good content. Yeah, I agree about Peeps. I was going to say I'm not a huge candy guy, which, I mean, I'm not anti-candy. Eat more sugar than I should. I'm one of those guys trying to get it out, trying to purge myself of that crap, trying to stay out of the pantry for no other reason. The only reason, I've been having this conversation with myself quite a bit lately, I should never, ever go into the pantry for any other reason other than to feed the cats. That's where the cat food is.